What's going on, everybody? This is Ryan Henry, and welcome to 180, where we get to share amazing stories of Christian transformation from around the world. These stories will literally blow your mind. Follow us on your favorite podcast player, or you can visit us at 180podcast.com. That's O-N-E-80podcast.com.
Welcome to 180 Stories of Transformation. We're here at today's SmackDown. This is Jacob York, your ring announcer for today's fight. Making his way into the ring from Bradford, England, weighing at 210 pounds, the leader of the Angel Army, the Divine Avenger, the GTM Heavyweight Wrestling Champion of the World, Garrett Angel Thompson. In the other corner we have, oh no, the enemy. Oh no, folks, the past of Gareth Angel coming back to haunt him. Bitterness, bullying, betrayal. What is the enemy's weight? Ladies and gentlemen, it's the weight of the world. The enemy weighs down the world with heavy burdens, keeping them from running the race set for them. Will this burden be too much? As Gareth Angel fights his demon from the past, will he win? Will he overcome the enemy? Stay tuned to find out. Welcome to Gareth Angel's 180.
Welcome to 180. We are here with the amazing Gareth Angel Thompson, who is a pastor at a wrestling church in the Church of England. Can you just give us a quick snippet of what you do, Gareth?
We do baptisms and body slams, sermons and suplexes. We've kind of brought these two worlds of professional wrestling and church together to tell Bible stories in a physical way, to unpack it in a language that people understand, to reach normally coming into church. And we do that through the storytelling narrative of good versus evil, of David versus Goliath, of Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan.
That's awesome. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited about this.
You have such a fascinating story that I think so many people will be just like, wait, what? A wrestling church? What is that all about? But before we jump into the wrestling church and your story, we like to start with a completely random question. So without further ado, what do you wish that you understood better?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think what I wish I understood better would be God's ways. I often find it being something that is both absolutely confusing, yet at the same time, absolutely amazing. It's just the way that God does things, the way that things happen, just the random moments, but also just the trials and tribulations that we go through. I think I wish I could understand God's ways more. But hey, I think we all wish we could understand that more. I think to give a second answer, I wish I could understand myself more. I'm always trying to learn about myself, about my past, my trauma, my ways that I react to things, the ways that I operate, how my mind works, how my heart works. And so I'm always trying to understand myself more as well.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, those are two great, great answers there. Let's go back to the beginning of your life and what life was like, your family, where did you grow up? So talk to us about that.
So I grew up in a council estate, which is kind of like a really poor area of Keighley, which is like a town just outside of the city of Bradford in the UK. And we were a poor family. You know, my dad was working class, my mom didn't work. And yeah, we were the smelly kids at school who, you know, we only got bathed once a week and life wasn't fantastic. We struggled day to day through stuff. At the age of six, my dad left my mom, so they got divorced, and my dad left the family home. Oh, and God, that hit my mum quite hard. So she started drinking. Yeah, I mean, she ended up with a really bad alcohol addiction. And what that meant was I kind of had to step up in the house and be the one kind of looking after my brothers.
Right.
And also looking after my mum. So I would often find myself taking my brothers to school. And then I would, after school, take them into town. We'd go around all the pubs, all the bars, one by one to try and find my mum. To get the house keys, go home, feed my brothers, put them to bed, and then my mum would come home later at night. I'd feed her and put her to bed. And that was like every day for us. That was normal. Yeah, very poor, very unstable upbringing is definitely a key way to put that.
Yeah, that is like not your average childhood at all.
No, but to me that felt normal because I didn't know any different, which is surprising now when I look back as a dad with my own kids. You know, I was like, where are the social services? Where are child protection? You know, when I look back, right, it's harrowing actually what we went through.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. You know, growing up, was there any component of faith in your household? What was your kind of thoughts of God at that time?
To me, God was non-existent, or I could say maybe out of reach. I went to a Roman Catholic primary school, so we had some experience of God and of Jesus, and we heard of some stories. We would pray during our assemblies. We'd have, you know, we'd sing hymns. My grandmother was a devout Catholic. I would stay at hers on a Friday night, and she was kind of like my mother figure. She bought me books on dinosaurs and bugs and the human body. She always prayed for me. She always offered to take me to church. So I had some experiences, but never a personal relationship. Never like I'm actually praying to Jesus or God. It always felt like they were way too far out of reach. And I couldn't relate what was being said about God being good and kind of pulling that back into my own personal life. I ended up being quite a very bitter and angry young man. Just the alcoholism alone is one issue. But actually, for a year of my life, my mother used to leave us with random people at weekends when she would go out to the pub and people would babysit for us. One of those was an older cousin, and he actually sexually abused me for a year. And that was kind of the breaking point for me. And I think for me to have sat in school and heard prayers about God being good, but going home to that did not compute, and they did not line up as to who I was being told God was and who my experience of God was. So, you know, when I eventually told my mum about it, the police got involved. He went to prison. When I went back to school after taking a break to get therapy, you know, I was only 8 years old, 9 years old. So I went to see a counselor. I ended up getting bullied for it when I went back to school. Yeah, the kids were like, oh, they call me horrific names and they would assault me. And actually that was where I learned how to fight. And that was where I discovered this world of professional wrestling and everything else in my life was so violent that I just didn't want a piece of it.
That's so much for you to carry as a child. What was it like to be having what's going on at home and then having that at school? What did it feel like inside of you?
I think it would be safe to say there was a lot of confusion going on. I couldn't even begin to try to understand it. But I also kind of felt a lot of resentment, a lot of anger towards my mum, towards God, towards school. You know, I thought, why aren't the teachers stepping in? Who's out there to protect me? Who's out there to stand up for me? It actually helped, I think, generate a mindset in me of I have to be strong for myself. No one else is going to be there. So it looks like I'm on my own and I'm going to have to do this myself.
So I'm wondering, you know, so you have all this pent up confusion and frustration, anger at God. What did you do with that? Like, where did that go? Did that just stay bottled up? Did it start to express itself in different ways?
I think at that point, I had nowhere to put it. And I think that's where I ended up getting in fights at school all the time, because I had nowhere to express it. I had to escape it. When I went to my grandmother's on a Friday, I could escape it. I could get lost in another world of bugs and dinosaurs and learn. Or I could watch wrestling for 2 or 3 hours and see these larger than life characters and get lost in that world. I never felt like I dealt with it at such a young age. I think I tried to escape it as much as possible.
Did that work for you at that time?
At the time, yeah, definitely. You know, I wouldn't suggest to anyone that that's what they do now. Now that I'm grown up and I've learned to process it much better. But at that time, yeah, wrestling was my escape. It was my other world to get invested in and almost live vicariously through these amazing characters.
So when these kids at school would be making fun of you, you said that's how you kind of got exposed to fighting. Would you fight them to kind of defend yourself?
Yeah, it would be the journey home from school where I'd just get jumped and I'd get smacked in the back of the head. So I just learned how to fight. So I never attacked anyone. I was always on the defense. But I struggled to control it and I just wouldn't stop. And I got in trouble with school many, many, many times for fighting. The counselors used to come into school and they would sit with me and they would always ask me how I felt. And I could never fully explain it. But I would always say that like I felt alone and I felt vulnerable. And it was like, if somebody's going to attack me, then no one else is going to defend me, so I have to defend myself. That kind of, that grew into a, like a mask of strength. It was like, if I beat these kids up enough when they attack me, then they're not going to want to attack me again. And right. other kids might not want to attack me because they saw what I did to that kid. So yeah, I was a very, very aggressive young man when provoked.
How long did that go on for?
Maybe 5 or 6 years.
How did things progress in high school? Did they get worse? Did they pretty much stay the same?
In secondary school, I started to find a channel for it. I started play wrestling with some of the few friends that I had. So there was this kind of physical frustration that I could get out of my system by just going onto the rugby field and me and my friend just practicing wrestling moves on each other and trying to replicate what we saw on TV. And the bullying kind of slowed down near the end of my time at secondary school because my reputation had changed and people understood that if they picked a fight with me, it wasn't going to end well.
Hey friends, make sure to share 180 with your people. It may be the best news they hear today. Now, back to the show.
So near the end of my time, actually, a lot of the bigger bullies essentially respected me, which was a really interesting dichotomy. So actually what I found was I found a confidence in myself, which was very well misplaced, because there's me thinking, well, if I'm strong and I'm confident and I'm in charge, then I'm going to be okay and safe. No one's going to try and pick a fight with me. So actually that was, I would say now looking back, definitely a negative mindset.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So shortly near the end of my time in secondary school, my mother actually threw me out on the streets. So I didn't finish high school. I ended up with no GCSEs qualifications that we would call them here, no exams. So I ended up living in a bin essentially for 8 weeks. Until I got moved into a hostel, that was when I realized that this is really bad. My life had gone from kind of, you know, having a home and a roof over my head, and it wasn't great, but it was better than nothing, to being in a hostel where there's people using drugs, there's people self-harming, there's people stealing and fighting each other, every man for themselves. And I'm having to try and scramble to get my life back on track here. And I'm still only 16 at this point. I'm still really, really young. I was there for 2 years. So that was quite a long time.
What was the breaking point where you couldn't stay there anymore?
Well, my mum had actually disappeared for about 6 or 8 weeks. She'd left the family home. My middle brother was with Child Protection Services in care. And my youngest brother had gone with my mum. So I was in the house on my own. And I was still going to school, but I got myself a job as a window cleaner just to earn a bit of extra money to buy myself food and to kind of continue keeping the house. Wow. And when my mum came back, she was like, oh, well, you've got yourself a job. You're a grown man now. Out you go. And just essentially was just like, I don't want you here anymore. Mm-hmm. And just threw me out in the streets. I think she was worried that because I was working, she was going to lose out on some money, because there was certain benefits she wouldn't get if I was working. Yeah. And I was nearing my end of time at school. So unless I was in further education.
What was the bin like?
I would say that the bin for me was one of the scariest moments of my life. Kids used to play football near it and they used to use it as a goal. So I'd be in there sleeping and the lid would be shut and it'd be full of cardboard and polystyrene. It's actually a really comfortable spot to be in hindsight, but the kids would play football against it. And every time the ball would hit the side, it would just be a massive thunder and a rattle. And I was so fearful that they would find me, that maybe someone would come and take that spot. And I actually only recently went back to where that bin was as part of a documentary I was in. We went back and filmed it.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd seen it in nearly 20 years. Yeah. And the feeling of that night just came over me, and it was dark. Yeah. So yeah, it was very, very scary.
I mean, 16 years old, and you know, to have that as your protection, your shelter, is just out of this world. What was your faith at that point? What was going on in your heart towards the Lord at that point?
It's hard to say, because we haven't quite got to the point where Jesus comes into all of this. But I did find myself at times praying for help, but not quite knowing if it was ever going to work or who was listening. There were Christians around, so I started to notice that there were churches that were coming in and offering to teach us how to cook or I got invited to church a few times. I had a few people who were just really nice people who wanted to chat to me and ask me how I was doing and maybe take me out to a football game or something. But I felt very suspicious of it. But also the men that I met didn't feel masculine enough, if that makes sense. I was kind of like, oh, you're young, you don't understand what's going on, or you've never had a hard day in your life, you don't understand what's going on. So I found them to be a little wet behind the ears, if that's like maybe the right thing to say. So I didn't give them as much time as maybe I should have, definitely should have, but I just didn't connect with them.
Yeah. So would you take us to the beginning of your turning point?
So I went into the town to go get my tongue pierced. I've got a few piercings.
Wow. And, ouch.
I was with a girl. We saw some of her friends across the street and we ran across the street. She hugged this girl and they were like, all kind of like, oh, good to see you. And they invited us back to their house and we went back and we played video games and ate pizza. Everyone else was eating pizza. I was drinking soup, because my tongue was so swollen from getting pierced. And we were just hanging out and we made really good friends with these people. And one morning they just said, why don't you stay over? And so I had experience of church. I'd been to mass a few times. So I was very hungover and thought, yeah, sure, let's go to church. Why not? And when we got there, I expected there to be pews and an organ and, you know, the vicar and all that kind of stuff. But when we got there, it was like a live band, really open seating, space for people to dance and move at the front, lots of kids running around. The vicar, Howard Astin, shook my hand at the door, took me in, got me a coffee, sat with me and actually asked who I was, where I'd come from, genuinely wanted to know a bit about me. And then we were in the worship and I found myself singing these songs about love and just this uncontrollable swelling of emotion. I just couldn't hold it in. And I found myself blubbering and crying and sobbing in the middle of the worship. And this guy came over to me after the service and said, I saw you crying. So I immediately went into, no, you didn't. You didn't see me cry. And he's like, no, I saw you crying, but I can tell you why, which really interested me because I'd never come across this before. So I was like, okay, yeah, you tell me why I was crying. He said, you've just felt love for the first time in your life. And you didn't know what to do with it. Gosh. You need to give Jesus a chance. And you need to give God a chance. And you need to give church a chance. I don't dare think anyone would say that to someone on their first day at church. But this guy had the cojones to do it. And he was so nail on the head.
We're midway through the fight of all fights. And we have a mystery guest tagging in on the side of Gareth. Stay tuned for more.
Wow. And it was clearly the Holy Spirit, but at the time I didn't know that and I was none the wiser. So that was when I started giving church a go. And that was when I started trying to kind of understand this and read my Bible and ask for advice from these Christian men who couldn't throw a punch to save their lives, but they had such wisdom in them. And just trying to unpick my past and trying to understand who I was and what Jesus really meant when he said that he could free us from the stuff in our past and give us a new start. That was the start of the journey. It still has its ups and downs. There's a few that we can touch on, but yeah, that's where it started.
From that point on, what started to happen in your heart and how did things progress?
I found myself suddenly realizing that there was so much more to relationships than I knew. I found myself having to open up a bit more about the way I felt and to talk about my emotions and feelings rather than just kind of pack them down and not deal with them. I had to drop the mask a bit. I had to kind of say, yeah, actually, I am struggling with this situation. Right. Or I don't fully understand that. Can you explain it to me? And showing some vulnerability, which for me was not in my character at all at that point. And what I found was actually my faith journey became very much about feeling and understanding kind of combined. So I would feel something, then I want to understand why I was feeling it. Yeah. And so that became almost like a mantra of mine. It would be, okay, there's something going on here. I need to figure this out and try to dig into the Bible, dig into some wisdom that someone might have to maybe try and find someone who had a similar experience to me. But I found it hard, I would say, because I'm a very working class guy. And there was a lot of people who I just couldn't connect or relate to. And I would share with them, well, I was abused as a child, and they just wouldn't know how to respond. Or I would say to them, my dad was never around. How do I relate to God as a father when I don't know what a father is? So it's trying to find people to relate to on a level to help me understand it. And that was really hard. After about, I would say maybe 6 months to a year, the girl I was with, we'd got engaged, we decided to get married. And this is where I kind of found my first real challenge in my faith, because a whole bunch of stuff came at once. And I thought that I was kind of on the winning team and everything was going okay. It was my wedding day, so my grandmother was there. You know, she was such a big, important figure for me in my childhood. So she's there on my wedding day, very much herself for the first time in a few years. And the next day, I got a phone call from my younger brother saying that my grandmother had actually gone home and passed away that night. And so her last day on earth was my wedding day. So I was, again, I was having all these feelings, trying to understand it and not feeling like I could. And then about 4 months after that, found out my new wife had actually been having an affair with a friend of mine. That again was another massive jolt to my system. And so I then lost my job and I'm suddenly back on the back foot again. And so I retreated from the church. I found myself struggling to, again, to put these feelings into context and try to understand, okay, God, why did that happen? Why did this happen? And why did that happen in such a short space of time after I'd been given months to try to kind of be on team and understand it? And it was really difficult. And so, yeah, I retreated. And that's when a guy called Dave Kendall, who is still a good friend of mine today, he actually came and kind of pretty much kicked my door in and sat with me and said, look, I need to help you figure this out, and I need to help you sort your life out and sort your heart out and help you with all this stuff. And actually what I found was so much more learning and growing and discipleship and mentoring through him than any other person I'd come across in the church. And it was almost like the two of us together, we were on this kind of journey of, okay, Gaz, let's look at forgiveness. Let's look at bitterness. Let's look at anger. Let's look at all the stuff that's gone on for you. And let's put that into context. So what does the Bible say? What does Jesus say? Mm. How does God relate to us in this? And me and him together, we went on this massive journey of growth and forgiveness. Wow. So much so that we met with my mum and we were able to have a really frank discussion with my mum about my childhood. We found my dad and I was able to restore that relationship with him. Mm. I kind of got back together with my wife. We tried to restore and fix the marriage. There was another affair a bit later on, so we did get divorced. And then we got stuck because we kind of gone through everything.
Yeah.
And then we got stuck on my abuser. And this is where everything really shifted. I was sat with Dave and I said, look, I don't know what to do with this. Last I knew, my abuser's in prison. And he said, look, the first thing we can do is we can pray about it. If we give it to God and we just say, God, you know, help me with this, forgive him in our hearts, then that's the least we can do. So I said a very bold prayer and it was, okay, God, if you're real and if this is it, if you can help me fix this, if you can help me deal with forgiving my abuser, then you've got me. I'm all in. I started working again and I went to work literally the next day and I was working in a computer store and I'm serving on the tills and my abuser walked in and joined the queue.
Oh my gosh.
And so I had to serve him. I tried to avoid him. I tried to get around it. I tried to slow down what I was doing so I would miss him. But here I am across the counter face to face with my abuser. And I'd been wrestling training at this point for a few years. So, you know, I know I'm a very capable guy. I could quite easily have jumped the counter and done this guy some serious damage. But I found myself kind of going, no, this is a moment. This is an opportunity for me to genuinely put my faith to the test. And I cashed his stuff through the till. And as I gave him his change, I held his hand, looked him dead in the eyes and said, I forgive you for what you did. And I tell you, like, that moment blew my mind.
That is incredible. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was powerful. And for me, as a young man, I find God using it now to bring me into contact with men who have been through similar things. And, you know, I never expect them to be able to do what I did, but you can't deny God's power and presence in that scenario.
I mean, just the fact that he shows up,
man,
to your place, that is so powerful. Oh my gosh. Would you say that was your moment where you were all in?
Yeah, that was when I crossed the line. That was totally where I jumped in this boat with Jesus and said, come on, man, where are we going? Let's go on this adventure.
Man, that's incredible. Wow. Leading up to this, you said that you had been starting to read the Bible. What were you learning? What were you getting?
What I found was when I was reading the Gospels was kind of seeing time and time and time again that Jesus was always saying that those of us with heavy burdens, those of us that are weary, those of us that have got whatever going on in our lives, that we can come to him, that he would, you know, he would bring us rest, or he would bring us restoration, yeah, or he would bring us peace, or he would be able to do something for us. And I kept holding that back. And as much as I read it and read it and read it, it wasn't until I actually started to do it. You know, it's one thing, yeah, to read it. It's another thing to do it. When, yeah, I started going, Jesus, this is yours. Jesus, this is yours. Jesus, I can't do this. Dave, I can't do this. God, I can't do this. And giving of myself,
yeah,
and giving it over,
yeah,
only then did I start to see changes and shifts.
Yeah.
So it was very much I had to relinquish control,
yeah,
and I had to relinquish power,
yeah,
and to,
yeah,
say, look, this is Jesus's now. That in Matthew 11, it does say that come to me, all those that are weary with, yeah, your burdens, and I'll give you rest.
Yeah.
So that was very much a continual shift and change.
Yeah.
That the more I gave to him, the more I received, and the, yeah, the more things shifted.
Wow. So powerful.
I think what I found was just how gentle Jesus was, yet how firm Jesus was. In the way that he spoke to his disciples, in the way that he spoke to people who had been through stuff, like the woman at the well, the way that he spoke to the religious scholars, that Jesus had a lot of challenge in him, but it was only ever challenge that you could actually overcome. So I felt, even though I was saying a very bold prayer, there was a part of me that wanted to believe that Jesus could do it, and actually kind of knew that he could do it, and wanting to stand in confidence in that, but knowing that it wouldn't be something that I couldn't do. And
right,
that he would be gentle with me at the same time. It's good to have challenge. And I think that's definitely what Dave brought into my life. He was very much a challenging guy. But also, like, the challenge was always going to be that if I was going to give my life to Jesus, then stuff's going to come. And I've just,
yeah,
got to trust that he's going to be gentle with me and give,
yeah,
me stuff that I can walk in and overcome.
That's so powerful. How did Dave find you? Who was this guy? Where did he come from? And how did he find you?
So Dave actually worked at the church. He did tech at the church, but he also worked for Christians Against Poverty. When I was in my darkest moment, when I'd lost my job and my wife had left me and everything, I was actually in quite a serious amount of debt. And so Dave came alongside me as a worker from CAP to kind of help me deal with my debts, but also, like, he missed me from the church. He was like, he knew what had happened and seeing that I wasn't there. And he just took it upon himself to just go, where's Gaz living? I'm just going to go find him. And I wish there were more men like him in the church. Definitely. He just smashed it to pieces, man. He was like, I'm just going to find you, Gaz. And me and you are going to deal with this. Just took it upon himself to just go and disciple me and take me under his wing.
When you said that this guy literally, you know, had to kind of like break your door down, it's like such a picture of the heart of God, right?
Yeah. I feel like Jesus does do that for us.
Okay. So here you are and you're holding the hand of your abuser and you forgive him. That was the moment you were all in for Jesus. How did life begin to change at that point?
Well, I found for myself really that, like I said earlier, Jesus is gentle yet challenging. And I found myself kind of going, you know what, sometimes I don't need to fully understand everything. And sometimes it is okay to just let Jesus take the lead. Mm-hmm. And what I found myself doing was going, okay, I'm now challenged by what am I doing with my life? Like, who else out there needs a Dave? Who else out there needs someone to show them the way, to come alongside them? So I got really stuck into the youth work at church, coming alongside young guys. I found myself working at Christians Against Poverty. So I worked for their head office for 7 years and I ran a debt center and a job club. So
wow.
I started coming alongside people in their homes and going, look, I know where you've been, and speaking from truth and experience and seeing people come to faith. And, you know, people call me an evangelist. I just say, look, I just share Jesus. That's all I do. And people hear my story and it moves them. And that moves them to a place where they might want to engage with Jesus. And that's all I ask. And so I found myself then kind of sharing my story at men's breakfasts and preaching and touring the country, kind of being this macho Christian with such a powerful testament that shows that if Jesus can do this for me, from the situation I've been in or where I've come from, then he can certainly do it for you. You've got to let him in. and you've got to open your heart to him. Dave actually moved to Australia, so he went to work for CAP in Australia. And so I immediately went to find another mentor because I just know how important that is. And I then moved into having multiple mentors and I've got like this whole network of experience to pull on. But then I felt challenged in, okay, my work life is focused on Christ. My family life, I'm now remarried to Beth and I've got two beautiful little girls, Isabella and Isla. Nice. And so I'm like, okay, I want them to have a dad that's present. I want them to go to church. I want them to know Jesus. Okay, I'm doing all of that. I'm a pro wrestler. So I've been doing that for about 12 years. And so I thought, well, how do I bring Jesus into wrestling? Mm-hmm. And so I saw it definitely as a platform. You know, I'm performing in front of hundreds of people. And so I started quoting scripture in my promos. My t-shirt says, pray, eat, wrestle, repeat, naming my moves after books of the Bible. And then I found myself pastoring these wrestlers. You know, I was talking to them and praying with them before matches saying, hey, look, can I pray that we both come out of this match unscathed? Can I pray that we're safe? And then they would open up and they would say, oh, you know, I'm going through this, or I've got this addiction issue, or I feel really terrible about this, or a broken relationship. And then when they heard my story, they were then suddenly kind of calling me at 2 a.m. and going, look, I'm struggling with this. Gaz, you're the only person I know I can come to. And so then I started seeing these wrestlers come to faith and seeing fans show up to shows with like crosses on signs and like saying, oh, I visited my church because I heard you talking about it. Huh. And then that's where this whole wrestling church idea came from.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, why not put some worship in a wrestling show? Why not put a preach in a wrestling show? Why not do a baptism midway through?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where all that came from as well.
Yeah. So take us to a typical gathering of the wrestling church. What does that look like?
So what we do is we have worship to open the show. They're like heavy metal versions of the original songs. So we'll kind of have like Shine Jesus Shine, but with like a lot of metal and guitar in the background. And then we'll have a fight. So that'll just be a normal wrestling match. And then we'll have a second wrestling match, which will kind of tie into a Bible story. So David and Goliath, Cain and Abel, Adam and Eve and the snake. We've done the resurrection story with someone playing the part of Judas. And then we'll have like a mini talk where we unpack it and bring it back to the Bible and then kind of share our faith through that. And we do testimonies and a bit more worship. And then we found people coming to faith through this. So we were like, okay, we've got a bunch of people that want to get baptized. So then we brought a baptism pool in. And so then we did baptisms right next to the ring.
It just blows your mind. Oh, but I think that's so cool.
I mean, like, why can't that be church? We just seem to be so bogged down in the standard, this is what church is. Well, what I found is through this wrestling church, we've now got a thriving community of believers who are Bible studying every week on a Wednesday. They're getting in the ring and training on a Thursday, and then they're enjoying an event on a Saturday where they're getting some teaching and they're kind of able to share their faith and be part of community. And then throughout the week, we're all having conversations, we're meeting up for coffees, you know, we're in the gym together. There's like all this kind of stuff that's happening, and it is literally just a groundswell of people realizing that Jesus is for them, and they don't have to go into a grand church with an organ and pews to experience Jesus. For me, that's a special thing, and it's what they enjoy. Then let them thrive, let them grow, let them know Jesus in their day-to-day life and see what God's going to do through that.
Yeah, amen. So you guys are with the Church of England, right? I mean, can you tell us about like the bishop joining in and how that all happened?
Yeah, so within the Church of England, and the bishop is normally the one who does the confirmations. So he'll pray for you, he'll lay hands on you, pray for the Holy Spirit to kind of come on you. And he loved it. He like rocked up with his staff and like completely like all in his garb. And he got in the ring. We gave him his own entrance music. So he came out to his own entrance music. He loved it. And he very rightly so did quite like a mini preach on how when you say yes to Jesus and you get baptized and you get confirmed and you ask the Holy Spirit to come into your life, you are stepping between the ropes and you're getting in a fight because the enemy is going to come and try and take you down because he doesn't want that.
Right.
And actually, all these people that are saying yes to Jesus and they're stepping into the fight, they're going to fight for what's good. They're going to fight for what's right and what's just. And they're going to fight against the dark in this world and the powers that be. And he spoke so well on that. And he loved the atmosphere. And he was like, oh, I wish more churches were like this, because he just got to let loose a little bit. And so the bishop absolutely loved it.
That is wild. Wow. Do you have a particular story that comes to mind of a person that you could share with us about how they have been transformed through the Lord in this ministry?
Oh, well, where do I start? I've got so many. There's one of our wrestlers called Jack Johnson. I first met him, I would say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, before COVID, at a random wrestling show in the back end of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And he was a completely different character. I found out he was from a council estate, just like me. He'd been through quite a lot of stuff as a kid, very similar to myself. And he'd actually gone off on one direction. He'd been to prison. He'd done some really, really bad stuff. And I'd gone off on a different path. And then I'd found faith and he hadn't. And he was really feeling like he needed to turn his life around. Yeah. And so next thing you know, we're talking all the time about what Jesus has done for me. And then I'm sharing faith with him. And then he's praying with me. And I just gave him my heart, gave him my soul, and just said, look, man, like, Jesus is on your case. Jesus wants to help you. Give your life to him, give your heart to him, and he will turn your life around. And he did. And we baptized him as part of one of our shows. And he was like, very much, yeah, guys, I want you to baptize me. And he's now sharing his story. Wow. With other wrestlers. And he's saying, oh, you know, Gaz, there's this guy I'm talking to. Can you give me some advice on how best to share this with him? And again, like, I've kind of took him under my wing. And he's just one of 5 wrestlers that have come to faith. And nearly 30 people who just attended the shows that have come to faith. We're baptizing 3 more people this Saturday. It's so cool.
Praise God. Well, this is so fascinating and so exciting. Oh, yeah. It's so powerful. Well, Gareth, it's been amazing talking to you. I want to thank you so much for being vulnerable. Thank you for saying yes to Jesus and letting God do the work in you. It's been awesome. What an awesome story.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have witnessed a TKO. Enemy fought with all his might, but he couldn't come out on top. Turns out he was no match for Gareth Angel Thompson. What? Who's here? Another man in the fire? The real winner tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. Gareth Angel overcame because Jesus came to the rescue. The enemy's weight was just too much for him alone. Folks, you've witnessed the smackdown of smackdowns. Jesus wins.
180 is a production of One Way Ministries.